Hello and welcome to another podcast with John Smallwood. John and I are going to talk today about what is a safe withdrawal rate in retirement. Now, John, I know there are an enormous amount of studies, and we're going to cover some of those today, and there's a lot of ambiguity about what you're really able to withdraw when you're retiring. So where do we want to begin the conversation?
Well, I think what's interesting is there's a fundamental lack of understanding in how much money I need to generate or replace the amount of lifestyle and income that I have today. And it was funny, I was at my house last night and my neighbor was over and my wife, and we were all talking, and we were talking about, you know, $1 million in retirement and what it could generate for income. Mm-hmm. And I started to have this conversation with my neighbor, and she's like, "I'm super depressed right now." I go, "Why?" She goes, "I thought $1 million was going to be a lot." And I was saying, okay, if it was in the bank, right now, your interest rates, maybe you can get 1%.
Wow, that's right? A good one. Yeah, I haven't even seen 1%, but yeah.
Yeah, like some of the bigger online banks are showing you like a savings rate of like 1.2, 1.3 that I'm seeing out there. But what's interesting is that produces just $10,000 of income before tax.
That's right, before tax, right?
Okay. And I said to her, I said, you know, when I started my career, that same interest rate was 8 or 9% 30 years ago. So $1 million was actually worth $80,000 a year, pretty simply.
Yeah.
And I started talking about, you know, a 4% withdrawal rate and a 2% withdrawal rate and all these different withdrawal rates. And that's when she said, "I'm so depressed." And my wife says, she turns to me and she's, you know, she's listened to me for 30 years.
Yeah.
She's like, "I don't understand." I'm like, "What do you mean you don't understand?" You know, like she goes, "How can people sustain their retirements with that little amount of income? And how much money do you have to really accumulate to really retire the right way?" And I said, "This is the problem that we face every single day."
Yeah.
Is the understanding of what is a safe withdrawal rate, how much money do I really need, and how long will this money last? And yeah. I think this is I thought my neighbor, who's been a friend for a long time, and my wife would know this because this is what I do every day. But what I learned is that they're actually not listening to me when I talk.
Well, you know, the other piece of that, though, is a lot of times people don't think about it until it becomes very real to them. And, you know, as we continue to age, I mean, you just said that you just had a birthday. You know, as we get closer to that retirement age, these questions are more meaningful to us. Until then, John, aren't they just kind of out there and, you know, they're out in the nether world and they're not as important? And, you know, when we hit those key metrics, 50, 60, 55, you know, 65, that's when this becomes real.
Correct. And it's, you know, I like to think of it as, you know, I just turned 50, right? And if I had to retire today with the amount of money that I've accumulated, you know, with using a safe withdrawal rate, and we'll get into what that is. Let's just say, for example, the old standard rule of a 4% withdrawal rate is accurate, you know, and I have $1 million, let's just say for an example, and that's going to produce $40,000. How long is that really going to last with the lifestyle?
Absolutely.
That I have. And people, there's this, you know, if you think about today, I'm earning a dollar and I save money in certain places and then I pay for all of my expenses. You know, I want that lifestyle, that expenses, that's what I want to maintain on an after-tax basis. That's the goal of a good retirement plan or a financial plan or a wealth plan or whatever you want to call it, is being able to sustain the current lifestyle that you have. And most people, when you do the math of, like I said, okay, I'm 50, I'm forced into retirement tomorrow, I've got a certain amount of capital that's accumulated, divided by my lifestyle, how long is it going to last without any interest? And now I make some interest, how long is it going to really last? And a lot of people find themselves, you know, there's a great ad out there where people are walking along a line and they're seeing that they run out of money 5 years, 10 years, 15 years into retirement, and because they haven't really thought about it. Mm-hmm. And turning 50, 70 has never seemed so close, right?
Absolutely. So as we were preparing for the podcast, I'm sure all of our listeners know that we prepare for the podcast. And you were talking about a couple of different pieces of information that you have that we're going to share with the podcast. But I have a question to tee you up to that, if you don't mind. So when I started in this industry almost 20 years ago, 6 to 8% withdrawal rate was normal, right? But the market has been screaming basically straight up since 2008. And you just said, you know, a lot of people are talking about a safe withdrawal rate of 4%. How come that withdrawal rate hasn't gone up in correlation to the market?
Yeah. And if you think about when you started in the industry and that 7 or 8% withdrawal rate, the fixed income returns were 5, 6, 7%. Your CD money market rates were 5, 6, 7%.
Absolutely.
Those have collapsed, right?
Yes. And so is that where those numbers, I'm kind of trying to take a step back for our listeners here. Is that where those numbers came from? So is it really based on the income aspect of the portfolio when you're making that switch from stocks and bonds or whatever?
And it is part of the appreciation also.
Okay.
If you went back to 1999, and you said, I'm going to look at all of the asset classes that are available to me to invest in, and I narrowed it down to, you know, the top performing equities over the prior, you know, asset classes, stocks, bonds, and you can dig in and say international, whatever it is. You'd look at this and you'd say, well, the Japanese market was one of the top performing markets during that 20-year previous history, going from 79 to 99, right?
Yep.
And you would be looking at these things, and you know, if you selected one of those asset classes, you know, if you selected the Japanese market, it's been falling for 20 years, right? If you selected the S&P 500, you know, from 1999 to now, the market is up. But what happened in the center? What were the sequence of returns? And this is a study that I've burnt into my mind, right? Because it's what we do every day. And one of the fund companies did an analysis where they said, if you took $500,000 and you put it in the S&P 500 in 1999, and you took a 5% withdrawal rate, which would be consistent, right? Okay. Because the previous return of the S&P for the 20 year prior was like, I don't know, 17 or 18%, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mathematically, you would look at that and say, if it's making north of 10% and I'm taking out 5, I should be able to increase my money for inflation. Everything should be fine. And that's that. We talked about this on previous podcasts about the linear calculation. If it's making 10% every year and I'm taking out 5 index for inflation, I'm never going to have a problem. The reality is the market volatility adjusted return set in. All right. So when you back tested it over the previous 20 years, it worked perfectly. Now enter 1999, you happen to be born in 1935 and you hit 65 in that year, right? Or
yep.
36, right? Or 34. And you have the unfortunate circumstances, that's the year in which you're going to retire. You might be forced out in certain areas, all right? So now you put your money in the S&P 500 because you've done all the calculations and that's what you like, and you now go between 2000, 2001, and 2002, the market's down 50% over the three-year period, rebounds to 2007, falls down another 50% in 2009, and then, you know, we're now up 300% off the bottom of that market, right? That's what you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
But here's what's interesting is, with that volatility of those returns, if I was taking out 5% out of a $500,000 portfolio, that's $25,000 a year. If I index that for inflation by 3%, by the time I reached October of 2014, the portfolio would only have $23,000 in it. I'm out of money 14 years into retirement.
Mm.
Because of the volatility. I don't even get the benefit of the Trump bump, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm out of money. And this is the fundamental thing. It's the sequence of returns that are going to dictate how successful you are with that withdrawal rate. And that's why you know, when you look at the big studies out here over time, in 1973, and we have a download of these things, Harvard did a study in 1973, and they came up with the fact that assuming a portfolio of 50% stocks and 50% bonds with some cash, they basically determined that a 4% withdrawal rate was appropriate. Now, if you think back to where the interest rates were in 1974, they were in a low interest rate environment, not as low as we are now, but they were down in the threes and fours, right?
Yep.
So what's interesting is then somebody came out in 1995, this guy William Bengen came out with, if you're looking at year by year returns since 1925 for a 50-50 stock bond portfolio using a 30-year holding period, he conducted that the maximum withdrawal rate was 4.2%. In 2012, he updated it and reduced it down to 4.5% due to falling interest rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
1995, Peter Lynch, you remember Peter Lynch,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Came out and said, oh, it's 100% possible to take out a 7% withdrawal from a 100% stock portfolio. Then some, you know, columnist came out and debunked his theory, and then he retracted the article stating fear of crashing. Okay, so he said, no, it's not possible. Like another guy in 2004 came out, Jonathan Guten. He basically took the asset classes and said, okay, let's go deeper. Let's put international stocks and real estate and all these different pieces. And that has, his study said, a 5% withdrawal rate is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Morningstar in 2013, and they revisited the topic and they determined that 4% was a small stretch and the number for safe withdrawal rate is 3%. And then Wade Fow, 2015, who's part of the you know, he does a lot of writing in this area, is that he came out with all the historical findings for withdrawal rates, came to the conclusion that the historical value of 4% for a safe withdrawal rate was the worst case scenario. He determined that the safest withdrawal rate would be around 2.5% by using calculations that he took into consideration. I want to read this because it makes sense. Retired minimum distributions once an individual reaches age, his 2.5% withdrawal rate takes into account the consideration of the age and when they're making the RMD. So he's basically saying 2.5% rate. And, you know, that's when you get back into my strategies of, you know, talking to my wife and to my neighbor, you know, how are we going to live in retirement with a 25, you know, with a 2.5 to 3% withdrawal rate? And especially when you're talking about a, you know, the longevity risk, which is everybody talking about, is, you know, people are living to their 90s and their 100s, barring any bad, you know, diseases. You could have a 30 or 40 year time horizon in retirement as long as you worked in many cases.
Okay. I can absolutely sympathize and empathize with your wife and neighbor because this is utterly terrifying because what is it? 50% of Americans have less than $10,000 saved for retirement. How is any of this going to happen, John? Help us wrap our brain around this. What are we supposed to do?
Right. So one of the things that you start looking at is what are my sources of retirement income? Okay. You know, Social Security, pension income, withdrawal rate, how much of it's guaranteed versus non-guaranteed. And a lot of things in life we think are guaranteed. They're not really guaranteed, but you want to, I believe it comes from strategy. And I just want to take a minute and just dig into BlackRock's piece for a second, because it talks about the BlackRock piece, which we'll put on the website for a download, was done in 2016. And it's based on $1 million portfolio. And it does a 4%, a 5%, a 6%, a 7%, and an 8% withdrawal rate. And it basically is doing a 50-50 stock to bond portfolio. But what it does is it puts the probability of having money at the end of a 20, 25, and a 30 year period. Okay. Which I think is really interesting is it says if I have a 60-40 stock bond portfolio and I'm taking out a 5% withdrawal rate, there's a 50 to 60% probability that I'll still have money 25 years later. English now, right? Let's put this in English.
Okay.
I'm getting on the plane. I'm going to fly to Florida. And they announced that we're going to be, our flight path is going to be 2.5 hours. there's a 50% probability that we're going to make it to Fort Myers because of all this crazy stuff that's, you know, there's a storm or something, right? You have, if you'd like to get off the plane now, you can get off that plane. I think I'm going to get off the plane.
I'm so not staying on that plane, dude. Right? Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Right? You know, I'm looking for a 90 to 98% probability. Now, you know, in a plane, a car, you may not get anywhere, right? But you want to enter this. And what's interesting is in the same chart, at a 3% withdrawal rate, you're at a 90 to 100% withdrawal rate. And then it takes it and it gives you different weightings of the portfolios so that if you're 100% equities in that same 5% withdrawal rate, you have a 60 to 70% probability of making it versus the 50 to 60. But if you're, it gets you thinking differently when you start thinking about the probability of success happening, right? So that all these studies are out here, everybody's got opinions. And what you want to look at is how much guaranteed income do I have? And and guaranteed income could be a pension, but the pension could not be guaranteed based upon his, you know, there are pensions that have defaulted. Social Security is a guarantee, but, you know, somehow it's not a guarantee, you know, so you have to approach that with a caution, right? I don't want to come off being, you know, that it is guaranteed. I just want to say that it's most likely guaranteed.
Very fair statement. Fair statement.
Yeah. I who knows, right? Turning 50, I seem wiser than I did 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Nice.
Yeah. But just joking. But you start thinking about this is what can I do that's going to cover the majority of my core expenses? Okay. But you get to a certain spot, and what I find is that I'm going to be retired. I hit this spot, and people don't really change their lifestyle numbers to reflect the results that they have in their accumulation, meaning they're still living the same lifestyle that they lived while they were working and earning income and had bonuses and had all these things. Now that they're on in essence, a fixed income, a fixed withdrawal rate, sometimes people don't really realize that, and they continue to spend the way they did, and sometimes they spend too freely. Okay. So you have to really get that in check, and you really need to, you know, one of my goals for people as we enter the retirement planning process and we're 5 years out and 10 years out, you've accumulated a certain amount of dollars today based upon your current savings rate and a reasonable rate of return. Without, you know, all these variables, how much money are you going to accumulate and what's that going to produce in retirement income, which a lot of times is less than what you're currently spending. Okay. So if I've got 10 years to retirement, I need to start adapting. I need to start changing some of my lifestyle habits. I need to start changing those habits, right? That's a whole conversation that we could do later. But let's just talk about strategy, okay?
Okay.
So if I come back to this and it says I've got $1 million portfolio and the safe withdrawal rate is 3%, that's also playing into the five rules of the institutions that we've discussed on a previous podcast, right?
Yep.
Which is, you know, let's go over them again really, really quick. So the financial institutions are incentivized to hang on to our money, to hang on to it for a long period of time, to put fear in our plans that if I take too much money, I'm going to run out of money. And the solution typically is let's increase the amount of risk that you're taking to get to the end result. And risk is – my father read a book years ago, and the comment was this, that risk is not like fertilizer. You don't sprinkle it over a portfolio and it magically grows, right? Risk could actually put you in a ditch, right? You could burn out your grass and not have any grass.
Absolutely.
So the theory is that when we start thinking about this withdrawal rate, if I'm bumping up against the five rules of the institutions, all the education and all the information, everything that we're getting is coming from financial institutions, right? And we have to look at that as a grain of salt and understand what's the motive for it, okay? And if they do it successfully, they're hanging on to money for a longer period of time, they're getting greater fees, they're pushing more risk to the investor, and they're really putting people in a bad spot. So when we talk about this, one of the major reasons people run out of money in retirement, you know, barring overspending, but normalized reasonable spending, is that when the market goes down, they're forced into withdrawals from their portfolio because they're taking income from their entire portfolio, and they don't have any. So if this year I'm taking out 5% from my portfolio and I need to sell, you know, 500 shares of XYZ to generate my 5% income, mm-hmm. and the market drops 50%, let's just do easy math, I now have to sell 1,000 shares to get the same income. So when the market recovers, I don't have as many shares to recover, I never get back. And, you know, in the book that I wrote, The 5 Ways Your Wealth Is Under Attack, we talk about the sequence of returns at death that's available. We'll mail you a copy. You go to our website, you request the free book, we'll mail you a copy. You can go to Amazon, you can buy it right on there. Also, it's available. It's called 5 Ways Your Wealth Is Under Attack. But it's that withdrawal rate in a down market. If I don't withdraw in a down market, then I'm giving the portfolio the opportunity to recover, right? Mm-hmm. So, but the problem is, if all my eggs are in the same basket and everything is down and that's my only source of income, I still need to pay my mortgage and my real estate taxes and my utilities, and I still need to live. Okay. So one of the things that you want to look at is in the strategy, what I'm looking for is somewhere between 20-30% of the portfolio in non-correlated assets that are highly liquid, that I can, and the rule is this, right? If this year is a negative year in the market, I don't know it until I get to the end of the year, right?
Yep.
All right. If it is negative next year, I don't really want to take money from my portfolio. So if I'm using this $1 million number, and I'm taking out $50,000 a year just as the 5% withdrawal, I'm pushing it because I need to, and the market goes down and all my money's down, I'm now pulling out more shares. But if I had 25-30% in very defensive assets, and the rule was this, I'm not going to take from the equity portions of my portfolio or the bonds, but I'm going to go to my cash reserves or life insurance cash values that are liquid and safe. And I'm going to take out that same $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. I'm now going to put myself in a position where I've taken the pressure off of the portfolio to generate income, thereby giving it return, time to return and come back. Now, I could have 2-3 down years in a row or more. And that's why I'm saying that reserve needs to be 25-30%, because if it's not enough, you're not going to have enough reserves to go take. You know, if I only have 10% available liquid cash reserves, you know, it only gives me a little bit of flow. You know, it doesn't give me enough backstop. And that's the key. Like, there are, if you look at that every single time in, you know, when you, not every single time, but when you look back over time, the market goes down, it stays down, and then it comes back up. But how long does it take to get back to par? And based upon the way you're looking about it, you know, if you think about 1999, it really didn't get back to 1999 rates till, you know, levels for about 10 to 12 years later. It was a 10 to 12 year period. So, and you had 2 50% downturns during that time frame. So you need a lot of reserves during that time frame, right?
Yep.
All right. So the strategy and how I approach this becomes the most important piece of this. And then what can I do with some of these assets that I can generate, you know, lifetime income without running out of capital? And it's one of the things that I think is most important is we as individuals, we as financial advisors, we as, you know, people have opinions, biases, and hearsay based upon, you know, our station in life and the knowledge and the training and the things that, that we have. And I think one of the most important parts of implementing a long-term financial strategy is to check those opinions and biases and hearsay at the door and take every component of your financial plan and understand what are the pros and what are the cons of this thing that you own and how does it work and what are my risk levels. Okay. In an upmarket, I, you know, when you look at portfolio, you know, returns and you look at the advertising that's going on, they're back testing, you know, they're picking periods of right. time and saying, look how wonderful we are. And our joke in the office is we've never met a back test that we didn't like.
Well, it's because they do exactly what you're talking about, which is they choose fixed periods of time that show their performance being at its best.
Correct. You know, you look back, you know, so we have to be careful, right? But to me, this is a retirement plan. It's not a set it and forget it strategy. It's a, you have to keep tweaking it and understanding what's happening. But the foundation is if I don't have to withdraw in a down market, I may be able to take a higher withdrawal rate because I don't have the same downward pressure.
Sure.
If I don't, and if I have my core expenses covered through, let's say, Social Security, pension, and maybe an annuity income that's guaranteed, you know, guaranteed income that's coming from, you know, a large insurance company. And those three sources now, you know, cover my day-to-day, you know, food, utilities, you know, real estate taxes and all those things. Then I can add in more sources of retirement income. And what I don't want to do is people have, you know, your tax return has a lot of lines on it, right? 17, 18, 20 lines, you know, for income sources.
Mm-hmm.
And most tax returns that you look at only have three or four lines where the income's coming from.
That's correct.
All right. So, you know, when we're building a retirement plan, we're building a financial strategy, we want to have as many of those sources of income that we possibly can so that the income is also diversified. So if I happen to lose some income from somewhere, it's not life altering.
Well, you know, a wise man once told me, and then I'd like to kind of wrap this up today, is, you know, the wealthy always have multiple streams of income. They don't just have one stream of income. And it is all about that diversification. And when you talk about wealth under pressure, when you talk about your planning process and all the things that you take your clients through, you are looking at those different components and trying to make it, as you just said, as diversified as possible so that if one of the legs of a two-legged stool falls, right, the whole stool falls. But if there's an eight-legged stool, you can lose two or three legs and you're still standing.
Yeah, or 15 legs.
Yeah, well, that's And okay.
You could lose 12.
That's right. So everybody,
as long as they're on the right side.
Right. So you know, again, the question that you need to ask yourself, number one, is are you working with a financial services professional that's having a real conversation about safe rates of withdrawal that doesn't prove their specific limited way of looking at the investment world as positive as you're going to be able to go? It looks to me like since I've been in this industry for the last 20 years, all they do is keep telling you can take less and less. But if you have up to 15, right, lots and lots of different streams of income, then you are more well protected. So closing thoughts, John, what do you got for us?
So closing thoughts, this withdrawal rate debacle, for lack of a better word, okay, is something that I believe is also unique to you, the individual. It's your circumstances. And this is what people don't tend to really look at, is they kind of look at it as a global picture, but you need to understand the unique dynamics of your plan and, you know, what's coming down the road. Are you going to inherit money? Are you not going to inherit money? Are you, you know, you can have liabilities. You have to look at the income stream, but you have to look at how well you're personally protected as well. And you need to have a plan that factors, you know, all these possible contingencies. And that's, you know, that is the most important part of this, is that every variable that we're talking about today is going to change. It's subject to change, most likely will. Nothing is going to work the way we think it's going to work, unfortunately, right? Because, you know, interest rates are going to change, tax rates are going to change.
Sure, absolutely.
President's going to get unelected. There's going to be a new president who's going to get unelected. You know, the European, you know, China, Brazil, Russia, India, China, all these things are putting impacts on our wealth and our future wealth. And my takeaway is the best thing that somebody can do is to sit with a financial advisor, make the best plan that they can for 1 year, and then come back and review that plan every single year. So over a 30-year retirement, you've got 30 really good one-year plans.
Beautiful.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I think is fundamentally important, and that doesn't happen. And we really want that to happen for our clients, for the industry, and it's such an important thing.
Awesome closing thoughts. Awesome, awesome. Make sure if what you're listening to today hasn't opened your eyes to reassess the relationship you have with a financial services professional, then honestly, John, I don't really know what's going to open their eyes. So, John, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Good to talk to you, as always.
As always, today we talked about what is the safe rate of withdrawal in retirement. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you click the subscribe now button below. That way, when John comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And it also makes it a lot easier to share this great information with your friends and family. For everybody with John Smallwood's office, this is Matt Halloran, and we will see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Welcome to the end of the video. Smallwood Wealth Management is an investment advisor representative. The opinions expressed by Smallwood Wealth Management and guests on this show are their own. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented for this educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as a receipt of or substitute for personalized advice from Smallwood Wealth Management or from any other investment professional, and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Smallwood Wealth Management is not a law firm or an accounting firm, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as a recommendation appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Thank you for listening.